The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that is right, Stephen Fishback. We are live here again for the Survivor Nodal. Did I catch you by surprise?
Live. That's crazy. Yes. Live.
Yes. Here we are, Stephen Fishback. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. I'm good. Wednesdays are fun. I get to watch Survivor. I get to chat about it with you. Like, what's not to love?
What's not to love? I felt like that we had our first big blindside of the season tonight. Well, I guess, Keith was blindsided. I felt like that tonight we really got the season off with a bang because I loved this episode. I thought it was a super exciting, second half hour with everything from once Wendy stole the flint, all hell broke loose. I thought it was a night where the returnees struck back, Stephen.
See, I found tonight really frustrating. I felt like there was a lot of really questionable strategy. I felt like people were making decisions that seem bad by their own logic, not even necessarily by my logic, but by the player's own logic. I felt like they were making decisions that were not commensurate with their own stated strategies. And I found that really frustrating. And I'm going to give you a hot take, Rob. Ooh. I really like Edge of Extinction.
Okay. All right. I don't know if it's that hot of a take.
Okay. Well, I tweeted about it and some people were not having it. So, okay. But I thought it was maybe a hot take. I'm going to give you an average take, Rob. I really like Edge of Extinction.
Okay, yeah. Some people are really dug in on that they hate the Edge of Extinction. There's going to be nothing that Edge of Extinction can do that people are going to come back around on it. But I think it's been fine from what we've seen on the show. But a lot to get into, and I'm really excited to hear why you are so down on players in this episode. It's the beauty of the Survivor Know-It-Alls live right after the episode here on a Wednesday night. Hashtag RHAP. We'll take your questions later on in the show. Stephen, tomorrow I have one of the most highly anticipated interviews in the history of Rob as a podcast coming up.
Oh my God. Is it Boston Rob?
No. More highly anticipated than Boston Rob that I'm going to be.
Oh my God. Are you finally getting someone from the Dirty 30 on?
No, I am going to be talking with somebody from the Dirty 28. I'm going to be talking with Spencer Bledsoe that he is coming in with so much momentum coming in. At his back, coming into this podcast, everybody wants to hear from Spencer, and very much looking forward to talking to
Spencer. He's the best. He's such a sincere, funny, smart guy.
Okay, well, we're going to talk to him on Thursday. Going to have Johnny Fairplay on the feedback show as well this week. So get your feedback questions in and talk to Megan Z on this week in Survivor. So jam-packed week before we even get to the wiggle room, Stephen Fishback.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That sounds really, really fun. And it'll be interesting to hear what Spencer has to say about his former tribe mates, Joe and Kelly. Mm-hmm. Dave Wright, also interesting. I guess I'll be interested to hear whatever he has to
yes.
say.
Okay. Well, that's the next podcast. Let's focus on this one, Stephen Fishback. Chris ends up under the wood. He is sent.
Wow. That was terrible. That was as bad as the strategy behind this decision. Here's my problem with this, Rob. Okay.
Who are you mad at?
I'm mad at everyone. And first and foremost, it's
even
War Dog.
Wendy.
Oh, no. Wendy, we love. Mm-hmm. Side note, let's put a pin in that discussion. Is Wendy playing for the sea of money? Is this like next level set?
I think that was the instant reaction on Twitter. Everybody had the same exact thought. And yeah. I have to say, I think that there is some, not just smoke, but fire. It seems like that we had the chickens and then she got this injury and it's like, boy, real possibility of a medical evacuation. What's the Hail Mary move? Boy.
Yeah, or even if not a medical evacuation, like the walking wounded, you're very likely to get voted out at this stage of the game. Why not take this? It clearly has nothing to do with her values at the time, right? As War Dog repeatedly says, she's not a vegetarian in her daily life.
I can't even believe this. She does. She eats chicken in the real world, and she's gonna eat the chicken here. What is going on with this? He was beside himself.
I think our first debut of the War Dog impression?
Working on it. Work in progress, Steven.
No, but it's fun to track these things. I remember your early Russells were very less good than they became.
Thank you very much. I had many years to hone it, but yeah. Steven, that. I do think that entered into her mind. Like, she did not talk about this like, I'm going to have a problem with chickens if they show up in the game. It was almost like she saw the chickens and it was like love at first sight. I have to feel like that maybe Sia is affecting the game.
Yeah. And, that's all for the good, right? It created drama. It was really funny.
Yes.
And, it also worked out to the chickens' benefit as well.
Chickens have been creating drama on this show for almost 20 years.
Yeah, as long as the show has existed, almost as long as the show has existed, the chickens have been creating.
They put them in there, and there's usually one person in every group that's has a problem with the chicken. So, I think everybody's on the same page there. And maybe Wendy says, "What? I didn't even know there was a sea of money thing."
Yeah, sure you didn't know. Right, right.
We'll see. We'll see how that plays out. All right, but let's get to the business at hand here with this vote and this blind side of Chris. You are upset with the players. And you're upset with everybody.
Well, I don't know if it made. I want to talk through this with you, Rob, because what's your perspective? Was it? You tell me. Was this a good move
for who?
For the people who voted out Chris.
Well, it was everybody that voted out Chris, except for Wendy. I mean, we don't see those votes now, so we're presuming that Wendy was the other vote for Kelly.
Yeah, they cut to her though, like making an expression of frustration. So it seems like it. And yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so Chris, I feel like, has nobody to blame but himself for this ultimately happening. And Chris was somebody who I think that a lot of us watching the show felt like had, upside to make a deep, deep run in the game. He seemed like he had all of the tools that you would need to be a really, really good Survivor player. Probably right. That if you were going to, be drafting the new players, I think he'd go very high and showed, great acumen. He was a stud in the challenges, a dead shot with the slingshot. I know how impressive that is to you. And so he was on this great trajectory, but David comes to him and says, "Look, I've got this plan and we're going to blindside Kelly, but let's keep it between us. I don't tell Lauren and don't tell the War Dog." And Chris says, I think we should tell War Dog. And David said, no. I really think it'll be a bad idea if you tell War Dog. And he ignored the advice of David Wright.
Why is David Wright telling him who he's allowed to talk to? Now,
he was allowed to talk to the War Dog. How did it go?
Okay. But I think that was War Dog's mistake. And let me talk through this with you for a second. So first of all, I don't think Chris should just be listening to whatever David has to say a priori about who he can share a strategy with. Mm-hmm. Second of all, if you go watch that scene between Chris and War Dog, Chris could not have handled that better. He goes up to the War Dog. He says, "Hey, I just want to see where you're," he does everything right. He asks War Dog what the War Dog thinks. He doesn't like go in guns blazing. He doesn't say, "This is the plan we've got." He doesn't mention David or Devins. He just says, "Hey, I want to see where your head is at." War Dog is like, obviously we're voting out Wendy. Chris is like, let's just consider Wentworth. She's really devious. She's a snake. Let's think about it. And War Dog says, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Now, we saw last episode that Chris and Wardog seem to have a really good strategic relationship. Mm-hmm. I think it would be like in fact, like the episode, like last episode hinges on Chris and Wardog's relationship. So for David to say, don't tell your best ally. Of course, I'm going to tell my best ally before I blindside them. You know, I'm not going to vote against my number one ally out here without giving them any kind of heads up. So I think it's really reasonable for Chris to say something. The weird thing to me is like why Wardog takes that information and then thinks, oh, my good ally comes and broaches a plan with me. He asks for my opinion on that plan. Let's vote him out.
So going back to last week's episode, I think we have to revisit that conversation between Chris and the Wardog, because I'm wondering maybe if the Wardog was not authentic with Chris in that conversation. And I don't remember if the Wardog said this in confessional or if he said this to Chris that, hey, Kelly is going to be always a shield in front of us and we can use her to our advantage. But I wonder if maybe Kelly Wentworth is a better ally for the Wardog than Chris was, and that the Wardog was just selling Chris a bill of goods of why we need to keep Kelly in the game, and maybe was not being authentic about his real reasoning about keeping Kelly in the game.
But there's still no reason to vote out Chris if you're Wardog, right? Now, like,
well, this is 2 weeks in a row now that he's coming to the Wardog and talking, or two votes in a row where he's coming and talking about Kelly. And if the Wardog is more loyal to Kelly than he is to Chris, he's like, hey, I got to nip this thing in the bud. This guy keeps coming after, I like him, but he keeps coming after my good ally, my better ally, Kelly.
But he's not executing on it. You know, he is going, he's coming to you proposing ideas. And he's letting you talk you out of them. Like, that's the ally you want. And you can get both. The thing is, from the Wardog's perspective, right, he's choosing to vote out Chris over voting out Wendy. Now, in my mind, Wendy has all of Chris's negatives for the Wardog and none of his positives. You know, Wendy is also against Kelly. If, like, being against Kelly is your, like, number one criterion for whom you're voting out, then you should vote out Wendy just as much as you should vote out Chris, especially because Chris is your ally. Chris is coming to you. He's an asset in the challenges. He's a meat shield. We know the Wardog cares about meat shields. Mm-hmm. So, like, why?
Yeah, he loves meat.
What?
He loves meat.
All right. Why Wardog would switch from Wendy to Chris? I honestly cannot think of a good reason.
Hey, make no mistake. I am not defending the Wardog here.
Well, it sounds like you are.
I'm not. I was talking about how Chris screwed up
I don't think Chris screwed up. That's the thing. Like, I think that, like,
no, here's where Chris screwed up. If I may, that Chris screwed up because he got talked out of a plan to vote out Kelly Wentworth 1 week, and then got talked into a plan to vote out Kelly Wentworth this next time around. So if the logic was sound to not vote out Kelly Wentworth last time, then the logic should still apply to not vote out Kelly Wentworth this time. So then he should then go to Kelly Wentworth. If he's around with Kelly Wentworth, then give Kelly Wentworth the heads up instead of Wardog.
I don't agree with that, because it's not like you're making these, like, purely logical decisions in a vacuum, right? Like, last week he saw the reason to vote out Kelly, but he didn't because his ally, the Wardog, asked him not to. And again, like, a sign of a really good ally, someone who is going to do the things you want them to do when you ask them to.
Yeah.
And this week he again broaches the subject. Chris is not looking to, like, make some power play. He's just kind of, like, navigating the game between a variety of alliances. It doesn't, I mean, and maybe that's what he did wrong. You know, maybe the Wardog sees, you know, and to a certain degree, I think with someone like I wrote this in my blog, you know, we know the Wardog is a rational, strategic guy. And so
we know that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he seems very rational, right? Like,
the guy's name is the Wardog.
Yeah. That's the, you know, the maybe, okay. I don't think that's necessarily irrational. But he seems like he's a decently strategic guy. Whether or not you agree with his strategy, I think he's, like, making decisions based on what's going to, you know, what he perceives is going to help him in the game. So I'm sure there's, like, some reason that he has that we're just not aware of. And maybe it is that he sees Chris being pulled over to this David Devins, you know, axis. And so he thinks we've got to neutralize that. That's not what we saw in the episode.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to look at this also from the perspective of then. So then David and Devins decide to then go through with the plan to vote out Chris.
Very confusing to me. Oh, go ahead.
They could have, you know, marched forward and then taken out Kelly Wentworth, but they chose not to. And I think that is, to me, another fascinating element of this vote.
Yeah. And I'm curious about your perspective. So David makes it very clear that he wants Kelly out. He says, this is the vote to get her. I need to get her. She's my number one enemy in this game. And then when Wardog finds out about the vote, his rationale for not voting out Kelly is that it's like, if I don't vote out Kelly, then no one will know I'm trying to vote out Kelly, which is so weird. Like, that's literally, as far as I can remember, that's the only reason he gives. It's like, no one will know I'm coming for Kelly if I don't vote out Kelly.
Yeah.
If you do vote out Kelly, it won't matter if you're coming for her. You know, like, why? Explain this to me, Rob. Tell me why David doesn't vote out
Kelly. Well, a couple things that with David Wright, you know, we know how important it is for him to be able to trust people in the game. He explicitly said, do not do this. That if we're going to work together, I need you to not tell anybody about this. And he directly disobeyed that instruction and went and told the War Dog about the plan. And so now the jig is up. And for David and for Devins, I think that they had to make this decision. And they're like, hey, we can't trust Chris. So what's the less of the evils here? And in a way, they sort of like took out the patsy, where that they were able to sort of like have this clean getaway where they had a plan to vote out Kelly. And then they could completely blame it on this other guy who they don't trust anymore, and just take him out of the game. That David has never lost any sort of trust with Kelly. He doesn't trust Kelly, but that information hasn't come to light yet.
Yeah, and I
Chris
actually think
has all the information.
I think the getaway is the crucial element here from David's perspective, because from my point of view, at least, a lot of this comes down to the fact that they are in the third cycle. They have to be expecting a swap soon.
Mm-hmm.
And if they vote out Kelly, they're going to have a very pissed Lauren and a very pissed War Dog on their hands. But if they vote out Chris, no one's going to be that pissed.
Right.
The other thing, though, the other wrinkle is that they don't tell Wendy. And Wendy, therefore, now twice now has voted with what she has perceived David's plan to be and been sort of like left hanging. And I know that, and I worry for David, because like David is like my, like in my head, like I'm seeing this through David's, you know, he's like my rooting character.
Your avatar. Rootable.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's the one I'm rooting for. Let's say, I worry for him that this is going to bite him in the butt, because while as loyal as Wendy is, and we've seen that she's loyal, you know, you've got to give her something in return.
Mm-hmm. But maybe, you know, Wendy, I think is irrational in a different way, where I think that she's just like, going to be against voting for Kelly every single time. And then who knows like how much of the plan Wendy downloaded, and Wendy seems to have no relationship with the other side. So even if she's not getting the right information from you, she's not going and talking to, you know, War Dog and Kelly and Lauren, who are mad at her for a variety of reasons.
That's fine. But if the swap does come, you know, then there's a variety of options. Then you have a free agent on your hands. It's not just like, it's not presumably just these two factions, right? You've got a whole other thing happening.
Yeah. Look, if you go into a swap next, where then instead of having like a fractured group, they're going to be in the minority almost any way you break it up. It looks like in the preview that they're going to go get switched into three tribes. So it's not the worst idea to have more of a consensus vote heading into a swap like that, because
right,
you're going to end up with a scenario where I'm sure that it'll be, you know, three people from Kama and then two people from Manu for somebody. And if it's one of these people that hates you because you screwed them over on the last vote and you have like a War Dog and a Lauren who are mad, then that increases your chances that you're going to go home, as opposed to maybe the two people being able to work together to some degree without having an axe to grind.
Right. And I think that has to be, that's like the basically the best reason that I can see for David and Devins not pulling the trigger on this Kelly vote, is that they're concerned. They probably suspect that there's a swap coming, and they're concerned that it could really bite them in the butts. What do you think of this three tribe swap here, Rob? It's a lot of tribes.
It's a lot of tribes.
It's like four tribes with Exile.
Yeah, I kind of suspected this is what they were going to do once we saw that the Advantage menu was giving a option for 3 weeks, so the timing was going to work out right. I kind of, you know, I liked the dynamics of these tribes. You know, I feel like that, you know, it's hard for us to get invested in these early episodes when we know that, you know, by the fourth episode, none of this is going to matter because we're going to have completely new tribes. I wish Survivor would let it play out a little bit. Maybe have one swap and maybe let it go down to 14 and then let's go into, you know, mix up the tribes at 7. The three tribe thing, I just feel like that we've done it so many times and it's you know, it's hard to figure out who's on what tribe, so I don't love it.
But I think for the sake of the game, the problem is with two tribes, if you swap from two tribes to two tribes, if one of the tribes gets a big advantage early in the game, that advantage is likelier to persist across the next swap if it's just a two, and then it becomes really tricky for that minority tribe to kind of make their way back in the game.
Yeah, but it's when only you're an 18-person season. If you can keep it at four-player, go through four vote off our players and then have a swap for two. I mean, that's like the traditional formula.
I know. I think that's the problem. It's like, then you just, you know, what three tribes does is it makes it really, it kind of destabilizes any real alliances and makes the merge much more interesting. I think it's, I think part of the problem during that, you know, the sort of like bad period of Survivor we had in I guess the early 20s was that, you'd have these dominant groups that kind of just persisted throughout the whole game.
Yeah.
And I think the three tribes kind of really fixed that. And we first saw that in the Philippines, and that really changed the whole game.
Yes. But in those cases, One World is the only one of those seasons that had a swap where I believe there was no swap in Redemption Island or South Pacific. So that, you know, it's, you know, small sample size.
Right.
But that I just want to just to close out this conversation. You feel like Chris did nothing wrong in the game.
Obviously, he did something wrong because he got voted out, right? I just think that it's so easy to say, well, David told him not to go talk to Wardog. Then he went and talked to Wardog and like, then he got voted out. Stupid guy. But it's, you know, for him to leave Ward, for him to leave Wardog out would have actually been like a very weird self-destructive move for him not to tell one of his close allies about this move that he was going to make. I thought the way that he told his ally was great. Like that, I thought that scene, like you really could not ask for someone to approach a strategic conversation in a better, more thoughtful way and a more subtle way. And, I thought Wardog's jump from that to deciding to take him out was a little wild. So
which do you feel like that was the better time for Chris to potentially go along with this? Because the more I think about it, if you're a new player and you're on a season and there's two returning players on your season and one of the returning players comes to you and says, Steven, tonight we're voting out the other returning player. Okay, this is the plan. And this was his opportunity last week. And then or we're going to vote out somebody who has professed their undying loyalty to you if they stay in the game, which was Keith. And so I think that maybe the move was better last time around, where keeping Keith, who was the most loyal to Chris, that he could have been part of that 5-person alliance and taken out Kelly Wentworth at the previous vote.
I think if you're Chris, you're just trying to sort of like make your way. And I don't think it's, when do I take my stand? I think he was playing it correctly. Like he didn't need to take a stand. He was trying to do what his allies wanted to do. So he was trying to triage
one ally in Wardog, or that the alliance of that he had Keith and then Wendy and then Devins and then David Wright. That's four people that he could have been working with at that point.
But like, it's not, you know, I think that any survivor is trying to sort of navigate a web of alliances, right? Mm-hmm. Like every single person perceives of themselves as being at this nexus point between a lot of different feuding groups. And for Chris, you know, that's certainly the narrative that we saw, but I'm sure from David's perspective, he's also at the nexus of feuding groups, and he's hearing. So everyone is getting a lot of inputs from a lot of different people, and they're trying to go along every single vote with a plan that they think makes the most sense in that moment. And I think it's totally reasonable for every one of those people to sort of broach plans with their allies, see what their allies think, try to digest that and find a consensus. I thought Chris was doing the right thing. And I don't think there's like a right time to vote out Kelly. I think it's whenever you can get the most, whenever you can get the most people to make that move.
Yeah. And you put so much stock in this relationship with Wardog. Wardog was willing to slit Chris's throat like that. So I think that's also bad judge of character on Chris's part to put so much stock in a relationship with Wardog where it was not reciprocal.
Right. Well, that, I guess that's correct. I guess that that's clearly the issue, is that Chris was obviously not as valuable to Wardog as Wardog, you know, was to Chris, and Chris misjudged that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so that was Chris's obvious mistake. I mean, we have seen very little of the interpersonal dynamics on that tribe, right? Right. Other than, you know, how they feel about Kelly, really. You know, we know how everyone, where everyone stacks up on how they feel about Kelly, but we don't know that much about how they feel about, and Wendy, but we don't know how much about any of the other interpersonal dynamics. And the Chris Wardog thing was one of the very few relationships we'd seen established last episode. So I guess I did think that, you know, think that that was sort of like a thing that was written in the text, but you're right that clearly that relationship meant more to Chris than it did to Wardog.
And this ends up being a huge night for Kelly Wentworth to be able to get through this phase of the game where that, you know, her name was thrown around for each of these three tribal councils. I'm going to miss Manu. It was a grease fire of a tribe, a total train wreck, and a very fun tribe to watch. Kelly Wentworth somehow comes away unscathed from these three votes.
Yeah, there were great characters in this tribe. I mean, you know, Reem, one of the highlights of the whole season so far. Keith, you know, who turned out to be a real fun character. We got Devins, you know, again, like Devins is a joy to watch. Wentworth, obviously, and David. Wendy, of course, great. Wardog, you know, Lauren is Lauren feels like she's a little bit overshadowed by Kelly. Like, I feel like
she found an idol.
What?
She found an idol. She had a beat. Yeah.
But I feel like if Kelly were not there, well, Lauren would be a bigger character. And then Chris, we have, who, you know, like you said, like the Swiss Army knife, he was the guy who seemed to have it all going for him. So really fun tribe. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Let's touch on Keith real quick. We had the big cliffhanger, which was, very quickly answered tonight. Keith, of course, did go to the edge of extinction. It was presented as the cliffhanger. Any thoughts on Keith's arrival?
I really enjoying Edge of Extinction. I really like this dynamic of these two people. First of all, I really like the Keith Reem thing. I like that Reem was about to quit, but now she feels some motherly obligation to Keith.
It's so beautiful and poetic that, you know, you get in the first episode where he's like, well, I'm kind of a mama's boy. And she's like, look, I'm not your mom, kid.
Yeah.
All right. Toughen up. I'm not going to be your mom. And now, like, she's literally in that role now. She's like, I can't leave him. Can't leave him. Got to be a mom for Keith.
Isn't that? Yeah. I feel like that's like, isn't that like the plot? I haven't seen this movie, but like from what I've gathered on Twitter, isn't that sort of like the plot of Bird Box?
I haven't seen either, but from what I understand, it doesn't sound like Bird Box, but
I thought it was someone who like didn't want to be a mother, but like was forced.
I don't know that. I don't know that part. I only know about
that's all I know from Twitter. So if I'm wrong, you know, please educate me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Stephen, they have this note and they have to go up the stairs to get the rice. And now from what I understand, that the rice is really, really far away. It's a really big hike to get the rice. I'm sure the alumni are going to be, just
in my day, rice was even farther away.
Apoplectic, that what they're getting rice to.
Yeah. I think that is great. I love it. I love how much of an effort it is. I thought that was kind of a beautiful scene where they're like really exhausting themselves to find this rice. And then their heartbreak and their disappointment when it's just a few spoonfuls, less than they even got at camp. I'm really, really enjoying it. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm. The note should say, some days there'll be rice.
I don't get it.
Well, good. Take the hike up there, but there's not even a guarantee that there's going to be something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mess with them.
Yeah. That would be a lot. That's great. I mean, they truly are being pushed to the edge of extinction.
They're being pushed to
the edge. Extinction is a little exaggeration.
Yeah. And in good job, Chris. I mean, that's how you do it. You're damn straight. I'm going to get another chance.
You don't ask the Lord for guidance.
I wonder if, Keith was just standing there so long that eventually like a producer had said, like, no, just get in the boat. Just go. Like, I wonder if that's why we didn't have to see it. That he's like, I don't know what to do. And somebody had to finally say, no, just go in the boat.
Yeah.
Like, just standing there. I don't know. Where do I go? I don't know what to do.
Oh, another question for you. Important question. Manu question.
Yes.
Chickens or comfort?
Is there a tarp in the comfort? I feel like the tarp is the only thing that I'm looking for there.
I still think there's an argument to be made for comfort. Like it really improves your sleep if you have like pillows and blankets and things like that. It's dramatically better sleeping on the shelter when you've got like a little bit of stuff.
But the problem with that is that you are going into a swap. And so that, at least if I eat a chicken or two in the next couple of days, then I have that in me. I've eaten, as opposed to if I sleep well on day 7 or 8, I could be swapped to a different camp. So it doesn't do as much good for me.
I just like, you get so little from the chickens. You're like, you're lucky if like one of them lays an egg, The amount of meat you get is trivial. I think the comfort might be the best. It's like, it's really
better than spices.
I mean, turmeric or comfort is tough. Like pillows or turmeric, that's a tough one. I might even choose pillows over turmeric.
Okay. Steven, before we talk about the comet tribe, I guess let's just touch on Wendy stealing the flint. What a great moment. And when she's dangling it, that she has, that she had the flint. I loved it.
I love her. She's great. She's a great character. She's totally fearless. I love that she has been cast in this position where she truly feels like she has nothing to lose. And so she's willing to do anything. And like a lot of people say, I've got nothing to lose. I'm willing to do anything. She actually does it. That was the other thing I wanted to say. Here's what I really think it came down to for War Dog. I think it was big movesitis. I feel like Wendy was such an obvious boot. And the whole tribe was like, obviously, we're voting out Wendy.
You think they were all blinded by big move-itis?
Yeah, I think they kind of was like, it gets boring, right? Like waiting for 3 days, trying to figure out what to do. And when you've been thinking for 3 days, it's Wendy, it's Wendy, it's Wendy. Suddenly in that crazy scramble before tribal, it becomes really fun to be like, ooh, what if we took out Chris instead? And that's kind of where I think actually happened.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about the comet tribe and what a great night for Aubrey. Overall. And I'm so happy for Aubrey because she had a rotten night last week. Everybody made fun of like, oh, Aubrey with her canned lines. What a stupid idiot she is. Hey.
This is like one of these.
Let me see if I can get this to work. This is really bizarre. Caitlin Herman is here at my house, unannounced. I don't think that you know who this is, Steven.
Hi.
How are you? Yes.
Here. Look at all those posters on your wall. You really have. Okay. Let's go back.
What are you doing here?
I was working out.
Hold on. Talk on this microphone. Okay. Sorry, Steven. This is this is pretty unprecedented. Are you mad at Caitlin?
No, I'm Googling her.
Okay. Easy, Steven.
Okay, guys, sorry. I was working out. I was at Pure Bar Brooklyn Hills.
Yes.
And your wife works out at Tap Out, which is next door.
Yes.
And then I'm watching Survivor at whatever time with my cousin. So I was like, he's live, like I'm bombarding, and she was like, you must.
Okay, there you go.
You're confused. Sorry, guys, I'm leaving. I just wanted
here we go.
Everyone's pissed.
No, we're delighted. Yeah, but how do you spell your name?
How do you spell my name? Come on, Steven. K-A-L-I-N.
Okay. All right.
But I know
you want to come in and talk Survivor at some point.
But don't
moving closer.
Don't tell me what happened.
All right, don't spoil Caitlin. This is unprecedented.
It's tricky to talk about
the... because it was starting to come up on my thing about puzzles.
Yeah.
Something happened tonight with... Oh, there you are. Something happened tonight with a puzzle on Survivor.
Yeah, that's every Survivor episode.
Yeah, but like Global TV was like throwing shade too because they were like, oh, puzzles.
You sure it wasn't Big Brother Canada 7?
No. It was a Survivor. It was like Kelly Wentworth saying like, puzzles are hard.
Oh, yeah, puzzles are hard. Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Okay.
That happened.
Okay. All right.
It's been fun.
Okay.
Well, I can't spoil anything or I would comment on that.
Yeah. Steven, I don't want to spoil. You and I are already having problems.
Do you know who that is? Do you know who that guy is?
No, should I?
Okay, no.
Was he on Survivor or something?
He's a early boot.
Early boot. As am I. So, Steven, we have a lot in common. I'd like to connect.
But how does it say Steven somewhere? Or do I say
I'm really good at remembering names. He said it once. I don't need to hear him.
That's pretty good. Steven with a PH if you want to Google.
I wasn't planning on it, but I will as
No. I just told you that I was going to Google you. I didn't want to be out of the loop.
Even sweet. I'm ruining your podcast.
No,
you were almost just like peeing in your pants when I walked in. You were like,
I got scared that I usually don't have interruptions.
I know your wife was just like going.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. I thought this was going to be where like your kid marched in, you know, with like the arms, like in that viral video. I was really looking forward to that.
Guys, let me make this clear. I did not break into anyone's house. I was very much invited. If not, like, she left the door open. Like, I didn't have to do anything.
So my door was unlocked?
She was like, the door is unlocked. Please come in right now.
Okay.
So that's how casual this is. Okay, guys, it's been fun. I need to eat and shower and watch Survivor and do laundry.
How was your workout?
It was hard, man.
Okay.
It's never easy.
All right.
Losing that Big Brother weight, guys.
Okay. All right. Well, you're gonna come back and talk Survivor at some point after you watch this episode. Okay. All right. All right.
You never ask me how my workout is.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Caitlin Herman. Yes.
I'll see you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Sorry for the interruption.
Just have an open door policy for any form of reality TV.
I guess so. Nobody that very few people have ever done the pop in the middle of the podcast.
This is why we have locks on our doors.
Yeah. That's the pop in. There you go. Yeah. Steven Fishback. All time Robin's podcast
just shows up. She's they're just gonna just show up.
Yeah. So all right, comma, Steven.
Yeah. You were talking about how great a night Aubrey had, how fun it was.
Do we need to take a break or we're good?
Well, I'm good. I was trying to get you back to where you were. I'm trying to
I was so happy
to write this train.
I was so happy for Aubrey tonight. I really was, because after the episode that she had last week, to have this great, great edit tonight, basically like a 3-season redemption arc of her looking for the idol and ultimately finding it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was so awesome how they went back and had, that footage probably wasn't
found
even
footage,
in the show,
I think.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't even think that was, it was in the seasons as far as I remember. It was really cool that she was able to pull that off.
Yeah. And then she ultimately does find the idol. So great job there by Aubrey. And then how great was that scene with, it was Ron and Victoria, and they were talking in the ocean. And Ron is asking, like, what do you think? And Victoria says, like, well, you know, I don't do that. You know, Joe and Aubrey are a pair. And then camera pans down. It's like, Joe's like, wait, what are we?
That was pretty great. Usually, you know, the Ron should be like giving her the you know, not like, you know, the like the wink, like, you know, the little the little lay, you know, like the hey, watch out.
Right. Then now Ron's question to her, I think, was, what do you think? But he should have changed the subject entirely.
Or just giving her like kind of like a, like, you know, the
like,
look.
Hey, there's Joe. Hey, Joe. How are you? Joey amazing. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Joe, what do you think? Come on, talk with us. We're discussing how things are back at camp.
Yeah. That was so funny. Reminiscent of, not to make this all about Big Brother tonight, Steven, in Celebrity Big Brother 2, when we saw Natalie Eva Marie come in the room and try to make a final two with Lolo when Tamar was in the bed, and then try to act like, no, I didn't say final two. I didn't mean final two. So that's something else that happened.
Yeah. I still have flashbacks to in Tokensheed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, in Cambodia. We were all sitting around talking, and I was saying to Kimmy, like, hey, please stop telling everyone to vote out Abby. Like, it's getting back to Abby. And Kimmy, like, says in her very loud Kimmy voice, you're the one who's always telling me to vote out Abby. And like, as Abby walks up, and then like, we look and like, oh, there's Abby. And then Kimmy does a very, very sly double take.
I really miss the Kimmy recap this season.
What?
I really miss time the Kimmy recap this season.
Yeah.
This week. A great week. Reminiscent of in Survivor Philippines, there's a point where Carter is talking to Penner and asks Penner about, like, so what do you think tonight? Should we do Penner or Katie? And Penner says, well, I'd hate to lose Katie.
Yeah.
Because he's Penner.
No. Yeah. It was great. I remember that. I watched that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. But that was all really, really great. And then Aubrey is able to put together the puzzle along with Ron. And I forget who was the third person that was on the puzzle with Ron and with Aubrey.
I thought it was very strange that Joe was not. Joe is super good at puzzles. I mean, he's a jewelry designer. This is his expertise. And it did give me some thought about, is Joe holding himself back from these hero positions?
Where we talked about that that last week, you said he's a stretch.
No, you convinced me last week. We had this whole conversation.
Yeah,
you just remember the parts where we disagree. I remember the parts where we find.
Yeah, agreement. Well, I went back people had said in the chat that Joe and Eric were switching off every other one, but it wasn't quite every other one. There were some points where Eric got two in a row and Joe got two in a row, but it was definitely Eric. However, they worked it out. Joe was not the person who was hitting the last one.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And so, you always sort of want Joe on the puzzle because he's so good. And so, again, like, mm-hmm. to not have him on the puzzle, I thought maybe he is like holding back, like you said.
Yeah, I think that Joe has been very underdeveloped in terms of, a character on the season. Like, you almost kind of forget that Joe is there this season.
Right, which is strange because he's been like the dominant character of his previous two seasons, or one of the dominant characters anyway, certainly. I thought it was very sly of him, the way he kind of like played that off, right? I thought he handled that very well, because that's not just awkward for Ron and Victoria. That's also awkward for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't really seem to mention it too much. He didn't seem like he was super offended. He just felt like that. He said he got a weird vibe. And I don't know if that was even that exact conversation that he was referring to. I thought it was interesting that we saw that Aurora is the one newbie who sort of lumped in with Aubrey and Joe.
Yeah, that was interesting. And I was sort of dreading. I thought that Kama was going to go to tribal council and
vote out Aurora.
What at Aurora, like, yeah. Oh, such a dead move. Yeah. But fortunately, that's not what happened.
Yeah. For Aurora, how did she get herself into this predicament?
All we've seen of Aurora is her saying that she's like a Joe fan.
Yeah.
That's like the one thing we know about.
Yeah, that's
Aurora.
Right. She did say that. She said, hey, I think she said that I'm gay and I'm even into Joe. So he was so charming that he was able to start the fire, he convinced Aurora and she never turned back.
Yeah, there you go.
So it'll be interesting. Steven, who of these returnees do we think is going to be the first person out now that we are going to head into this swap?
I mean, it really has been all eyes on Wentworth, right? Like, if it's,
But see that now... Now, Kelly Wentworth, she's been swap screwed in the past.
Yes.
So the swap is going to be precarious for her. But David Wright this is not his time to shine in the game either. I mean, this is when he almost got voted out in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. I think it was between him and Cece of who they were going to vote out after the swap in that season, because, you know, you're in a six person or five person tribe now.
Right.
You know,
nowhere to hide.
David Wright, he's got a target on his back. He's somebody who's not going to be, helping you if it's a particularly, physical challenge in the water. So Joe, I think, is going to be safe here through the merge.
Joe is probably safe. And the Joe tribe will probably not actually ever go to tribal council. Right. Yeah. I mean, Joe, I think, still holds the record for most time immune in a Survivor season. I would say, I mean, I just think David is too good. David is not going home with the swap.
Okay. I hope you're right.
Me too. I hope I'm right.
Steven, Anything else you want to touch on before we get to the questions?
I'm trying to think anything else at the Comet Tribe. That was fun. We talked about Aubrey. We talked about that little conversation. But the only other thing to say, Ron's advantage has now expired.
Yeah.
Do you think it was the right move for him not to steal the reward?
To steal the chickens. I think you would have made a lot of people mad also. One, you have the people that are on the other tribe that they just won the reward. Like, hey, this guy is a real piece of work that he stole our chickens. Then you have the people on his own tribe that's like, boy, Ron is our friend and he didn't tell us about this. So, yeah, I think that unless it was going to be something to say, but I'm surprised that they showed it in the episode that that he even ended up getting the advantage if it wasn't going to play.
I don't know. It's a little fun. It's a little fun new thing.
He had a great reaction to finding it.
Yeah. I agree with you. Right choice. Especially because there's always you want to hold it just in case you lose immunity. You know, they just lost a challenge. There's the chance that they'll lose a second challenge. They almost did. They were the blue tribe was ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, let's take some questions from the listeners here as we're live here tonight after episode number 3 of The Edge of Extinction. Steven, Amanda Fallon wants to know, who's most likely to get swap screwed?
Who's in a good position now who will not be in a good position at the swap?
Well, I'd say one Lauren? Of these... Lauren, that's possible. I mean, she's an athlete though. So, she could probably hold her own in the challenges. I would say that if we're going to talk about somebody who could get screwed, I would say that it could be one of these, first time players on Comma, that they have a 6-person alliance. They're feeling good. We're going to vote out Aubrey. We're going to vote out Joe. Now, all of a sudden they could end up in a situation where, hey, if it's like they're on a tribe with Aubrey and Manu are like, that you could see a scenario where you could have, any number of those players go home.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. It's hard because they're sort of an undifferentiated mass right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, so it's hard to say Julia's in trouble or Julie's in trouble. Julie's in trouble. Yeah.
Those are two players that have been in, that are in good spots that could get right, burned.
Right. Right.
That's possibilities. Okay. Steven, what about this one?
Pao says, Steven, why do you love Wendy? She's not good at camp, challenges, or even at strategies. I think we both love Wendy.
Yeah, but this is Pao says, why do you love Wendy, Steven?
I love Wendy because she is fearless and she is willing to do things and make the show fun. And if I were living with her, I'm sure it would be super annoying. I would probably hate her. I don't think her strategy is necessarily good, is very good. But since not that much is happening, and she is one of the very few people who's actually doing something on the show, it's fun to watch her do it.
Yeah. I think that she's probably owning Twitter. I think that people are probably stanning Wendy at this point, that she is the person who is, speaking truth to power in the game, of that she's going to stick it to these people that are telling her what to do. And she's making it happen. She's stealing the flint. She's being mischievous and she's having fun doing it, Steven.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fun to watch people have fun out there. And she seems delighted. And she's also very honest and vulnerable. You know, when she was having a moment with her foot, she was totally open about that. She's just giving us her all, and I think that's really, you really can't ask more of anyone on a reality show than just giving all of themselves.
Yeah. Whatever the opposite of a game bot is, that's what she is. And I think that people really appreciate that. You know, we saw her in the first episode that they said, okay, everybody's voting at Reem. She's like, well, I'm not doing that. That's my friend. I'm not going to vote against my friend. Why would I do that? Tribe gets chickens. I'm going to let them go. I'm going to let them out. I'm going to steal the tribe's flint just because. And we know that Kelly Wentworth has been on a tribe before where they lost the flint and she doesn't like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Should want to negotiate.
Yeah, we've seen it happen.
Okay, Steven, what about Ethan? Ethan Lyons.
Ethan Lyons wants to know, which read was worse: Chris thinking he should trust Wardog, or Wardog thinking he should trust Kelly over Chris?
Well, to be fair, there's no evidence to support that Kelly is out to get War Dog, so that Chris thinking he could trust War Dog was certainly worse than War Dog thinking he could trust Kelly.
Yeah. We don't know. I mean, Kelly and War Dog
could, well, she'd go to the final three with War Dog if she could.
Yeah. I mean, and War Dog and Kelly might have a great relationship. We've seen very little about it. Like, you know, we know that Lauren and Kelly have a good relationship. Mm-hmm. War Dog says he has a good, I mean, we know about as much, we know less about Kelly and War Dog's relationship than we did about Chris and Kelly, Chris and War Dog's relationship.
Okay. All right. The question from Nikki, as experienced survivor players, can you tell me, was Devin's correct when he said that puzzles are hard? Let me tell you how, you know, survivor puzzles are hard. David Wright is a puzzle master. David Wright has 3D printed actual survivor puzzles and practices them at his house. And he was stumped by this survivor puzzle.
Just because you practice puzzles doesn't make you good at them. I've practiced a lot of things that I'm really bad at.
David Wright is good at puzzles?
Listen, I don't know. I didn't see it tonight. I mean,
if there's a puzzle and David Wright is struggling with it, that means it's a hard puzzle.
You'd think I was good at puzzles, but I'm not. You know, I've got glasses and I'm nerdy. Like, why do you assume David Wright is good at puzzles?
Math. I don't know if we know that you're good at puzzles.
But why do you assume David Wright is good at puzzles?
Because David Wright posts on Facebook, hey, here are all the puzzles that I work on at my house. That David Wright is incredible at puzzles. Where is your evidence that David Wright is not good at puzzles?
I'm just saying, I don't have any, but you don't have any that he's good. You know, I work on a lot of
things. I don't have any that's good.
Just because you work on something doesn't mean you're good at it. You know, I've tried
you're being very ticky-tack here. Just because you do something all the time and practice it doesn't mean that you're good at it.
Now look, I agree. It's the other thing about these puzzles, though, is also just like the mental state when you're doing them, right? You've just had this really exhausting. Well, first of all, you haven't eaten a lot in the past week. You've just done this exhausting challenge. Your adrenaline is up. Mm-hmm. Your anxiety is up. You know, solving something in your room is really different from solving it with this, like, with all of the intensity of a survivor challenge. So, you know, and you can just flub it. You can just flub it because you miss it, because you panic for a moment. I mean, you know, I've certainly had, you know, a lot of anxiety when I've done puzzles and like not been able to see them when if I were doing it in a calmer situation, it wouldn't have been a problem at all. So a lot of it is just like keeping cool under pressure.
If I recall, I think this was also the puzzle that I think we've seen this puzzle specifically a couple of times. I think that most famously, and I'm sure the chat will call me on this if I'm wrong, was the first challenge in Survivor Blood versus Water, where it was the battle between Laura and Tina versus, I think it was Sierra and Katie. And it was the mom schooling the daughters on putting that puzzle together.
Yeah.
Making up for a big advantage that the loved ones had after Jervis couldn't swim. Don't let that fool you. Okay. All right. Steven, let's take this question from the great Jess East wants to know, was Chris in a bad spot regardless? He seemed to be at the bottom of the four person alliance on both sides.
This is a good point.
Yeah. So how does that change anything for you?
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, and that was probably a lot of it, right? I mean, that he was at the bottom of these two alliances. They probably saw that, you know, who's friends with whom. And now I really think that was probably part of War Dog's calculus, is that like this guy is over there talking to Devins and David all the time, just as much as he's with us. I don't think necessarily being on the bottom of two alliances is so detrimental at this point in the game, because, you know, there's a lot of game left and you have a lot of maneuverability. What do you think, Rob?
I think being at the bottom of two alliances is a great place to be because it gives you a lot of room to swing back and forth. And so I think that where you want him to go and, you know, bring the War Dog in. I don't know if he could have voted with that four. Like, I think he could have patched things up with the War Dog. I don't think there was going to be a scenario where then, he would have been the next person to go if you would have made this move.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is, it's like, no, you're nobody's number one, right? I mean, I'm actually a bigger fan of being like in the tight. I'm a bigger fan of being like the in the super tight knit group, because I think that A, you have really, you know, you have deeper bonds with your allies, and therefore like they can trust you more, you can trust them more. And then B, your enemies aren't mad at you when you vote them out, or they're not as mad at you. They're going to be much more mad if you're playing both sides and you vote them out than they're going to be if you're their you know, stated enemy and you vote them out. But that said, you know, this is such an early point in the game where that's not even relevant, right? We're not even at the jury phase of the game yet. So I agree with you, Rob, that at this point in the game, I think you want to have as many, you know, as many fingers in as many pots as possible without getting caught. And I think Chris, maybe Chris's problem is that he got caught.
Okay. All right. Let's take this question from Shelly, Stephen.
All right. Shelly wants to know, if Jeff isn't doing the normal after the tribal speech, is that not a giveaway? That's some type of good twist.
That's a great, great point, Shelly, that he's not saying anything after the votes. He normally comes out and says, well, guys, that just goes to show you that blindsides happen every day out here on Survivor. And he's not saying that this season. So they should know there's a twist.
Yeah, presumably he's saying it though, right?
We're not seeing it, so there must be that they that's it. They walk off in silence and
okay.
No, I'm sure he's coming out and saying the usual spiel. We're just not seeing it.
Right.
Seeing different stuff.
Yeah.
Just like we're not seeing how they voted, but it still happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Chris, going to Extinction, how would you rate his chances to get back in?
I don't know. I mean, he's definitely the most athletic one there right now, but that's a lot of
right?
That's a lot of calories. It really just depends on when, like, he's a big guy, like, and mm-hmm. that's, I think that island is going to take a toll on him. It's a lot of it just depends on how long he lasts. But yeah, probably a heavy favorite.
Yeah. Of the group so far.
Of these three, who are you rooting for to get back?
Reem's the best TV. Chris is probably the best player. Keith seems like the nicest kid.
Yeah, all right. So who are you rooting for?
Reem. Gotta see. Yeah. I want to see Reem get back in and get back to reaming.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. All right. John Bledsoe wants to, do you think that if David and Rick didn't tell Wardog the plan to get rid of Wentworth, that she would have actually ended up going home? David didn't want to tell him, but Rick did. I don't think that's how it happened. That they told Chris, don't tell Wardog, and Chris told Wardog, and then Wardog told David about the plan, or told Devins about
Wardog told Devins. Yeah. And I actually also think that was probably part of why they were committed to voting out Kelly, is that probably Devins wanted to preserve his relationship with Wardog. I mean, a lot of it is just, you know, relationship preservation at that point in the game. But it's a good question. Like, what if Chris hadn't told, you know, to restate the question, right? What if Chris hadn't told Wardog? Would Kelly have gone home? Sure. Yes. Looked like it. Looked like it.
I think I believe so. And then that would have been very interesting. But look, I'm very happy to keep Kelly Wentworth in the game. The show, yeah. it'd be a better podcast tonight if you could believe it, if Kelly Wentworth went home. But it'd be a less fun season.
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay, so look, well, let's have fun along the way, but let's keep all the big players in the game as far as we can get. That's how you have a good season. Okay,
it was still a good podcast.
I mean, it was a great podcast. I mean, we had somebody walk into the
special
studio.
Guest. Yeah. It's never happened before. First time ever on the Survivor Know-It-Alls.
First time that I could think of. Okay. Then
I think I've had like the wine and cheese people on once, maybe back in the day.
Yeah, way back when. All right. What about Travis?
All right. Travis wants to know, has David and Devins left themselves vulnerable in that Wendy can spill the plan to the rest of the tribe? That's a good question. Wendy can really screw over David and Devins here.
Yeah, but was Wendy that close with Chris where she's like, how could you guys have voted out Chris? Like, let me tell you what was really going on. It doesn't seem in character for Wendy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, and I think Wendy is, those were her. Yeah. And Wendy's only chance in the game is really just to like be there for with David and Devin. So at this point, so I don't think she's going to sort of blow up their game and therefore definitely blow up her own game.
Okay, let's do one or two more questions here, Scott. This is from Pineapple Boy 27, Steven.
Oh, I love Pineapple Boy 27. Does David's obsession with voting out Golden Girl Kelly remind Steven of his obsession with voting out Golden Boy Joe? It's so hard to even talk like, because, well, I guess, I mean, like, in as much as David feels like Kelly is has a lot of troops on her side and is targeting him. And I felt like Joe had a lot of troops on his side and was targeting me. I guess that's a parallel.
David doesn't trust Kelly. And that's really what it comes down to. I don't think it was that you had an issue with you don't trust Joe, right?
No, it was. That was larger. That was a lot of it. It was that he was actively targeting me.
Mm-hmm. Was he actively targeting you, or you were actively targeting him, and that made
I tried to
really targeting you.
I know. It's so boring to talk. I mean, I apologize to everyone who's bored about me. Oh, okay, good. Then let me go in at length. I wanted to ally with Joe. He was like one of the few people I had spoken to not to make an alliance before the season, but just to like chat, just to like say hi to, because I was a fan. And I thought we were going to have a thing, and he came after me. So that's when I turned on him.
What point in the game did he come after you?
Like out of the gate, like really, really early, like first couple of days.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Could he use some turmeric to get that inflammation to go down?
Yeah, exactly. If only we had turmeric to like quell the heat between us, it would have been so good.
Okay. Hoodie Monster, who will be more an advantage on the swap? The returnees on the tribe with two returnees? Sorry. Who will be more at an advantage of the swap? The returnees on the tribe with two returnees or one of the single vets?
This is the other crazy thing about Joe. When we swapped and he came onto our tribe, it was me, Jeremy, you know, and Kimmy, and I think Tasha with Joe and Wentworth and Keith, I think it was, right? Joe was trying to get me out. He was trying to get Jeremy. I was like, he was trying to get Jeremy and Tasha to vote me out. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway. Let's go back to that question you just asked that I totally ignored.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a confusing question of that. I guess if you're a new player, do you want one or two returnees on your swap tribe?
I think the fewer the better, right? Like as a rule, like you want to be able to do as much as, you know, because they are just like such focal points of power. And so, you know, at least if it's one person, you can kind of have them the with them or against them tribe. But you know, we're seeing on Manu that it's like David versus Kelly. You know, mm-hmm. it's not
David and Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. And it's everyone else is sort of caught in the orbit.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question to answer. I think it depends on which two are going to necessarily, you know, you end up on a tribe with, you know, David and Kelly together, you know, that David may well still want to continue on with like, hey, let's vote out Kelly at this next tribal council. So I think it really depends. It should be fascinating to watch next time out. Steven, who got the fishies this week?
Who do you think?
I would probably give the fishy to... I know that you're not gonna give it to War Dog because you don't think that he made the right decision to vote out Chris. I almost feel like that you want to give it to Chris on the episode that he got voted out on.
But he didn't do anything great.
You're gonna give it to Aubrey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know me so well. This is so beautiful. I love how well you know me.
Yes.
It makes me so happy.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. Let's talk about what's coming up here on Rob Has a Podcast. Steven, do you follow The Bachelor?
I do not.
Oh, well, this was an all-time week on The Bachelor, and everybody is waiting to hear what Amy and Haley have to say on our Bachelor Rehap-Up in our Rehap-Ups podcast feed. The big Colton jumped the fence, and everybody wants to hear what's going on. So check out our Bachelor Rehap-Up and News AF. Danny, Tyson, and I are back once again. Fun News AF this week, talking about all of the crazy stories going on in the world on each edition of News AF. Big Brother Canada 7 kicked off earlier tonight, Stephen. And wow. big load in into the Big Brother Canada 7 house that was earlier tonight. Taryn Armstrong will have a recap of all of the events from the premiere and getting you set up for, we're going to have a live eviction on Thursday night with the panel. I'm going to be along with the LFC on Thursday night when we get into our first eviction of the season. Our friend Arissa Cox featured there as we discuss eviction number one of Big Brother Canada 7 as that ball gets rolling as well. And then Spencer Bledsoe, going to talk to him on the Thursday afternoon. And this should be a good one. Dying to talk to Spencer about everything going on. And a great episode to boot as well. My wife, Nicole Sestrino, is going to be a guest on the RHAP B&B, Stephen. Do you know about the B&B?
Yeah. Bloom and Barassi.
Yes.
Uh-huh. The Mikes. Mike Bloom and Mike Barassi. No, it's Mike and Leanna.
Yes.
Nice,
yes,
try, yes. Buddy. Nice try.
Yeah, so Nicole Sestrino is going to be that's going to be a must listen. That's going to be must listen. And then Johnny Fairplay is going to be a guest on the feedback show. We'll talk to Johnny Fairplay about all of the t-shirts, his rivalry with War Dog, and everything else.
Does he have a rivalry with War Dog?
Apparently. And everything going on with Johnny Fairplay on our feedback show. Going to record that one Friday morning, so don't dilly-dally with those feedback questions. And then David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis will bring you Why Chris Lost. And that if Stephen Fishback is any indication, it's going to be tough to come up with a reason for why Chris lost the game.
But people are going to be like, oh, he shouldn't have talked to David. David told him not to talk to War Dog, so he shouldn't have talked to War Dog. I'm not into that take. Give me a better take.
Okay. Well, you got to familiarize yourself with David Bloomberg's rules, because he's going to tell you exactly where he went wrong. Did he not?
Oh, I don't mean with that.
Scheming, okay. Plotting a secret. Okay. And then the great Megan Z will be our guest on the brand new podcast This Week in Survivor. We'll get Megan's takes on everything. We'll talk about all of the drama going on social media and play the This Week in Survivor history quiz on the brand new This Week in Survivor podcast. And don't forget about The Wiggle Room, episode number 3. What a lineup for every single Survivor week. We're having so much fun here on The Edge of Extinction. Steven is your mouth is hanging open.
It's really so much. It's really, really impressive what you do here.
That's one word for it, Stephen. we're making a lot of shows and we're having a lot of fun. And luckily, we have a lot to chew on here this week. All right. Of course, none of this is possible without the support of our amazing patrons here of Rob is a Podcast. RobIsAWebsite.com/patron for more information on everything that we're doing behind the scenes. In addition to all this podcasting, we're doing all these patron podcasts as well, plus access to all of our Facebook groups and everything that we're doing in the Rob is a Podcast community. Go ahead and check that out. RobHasAWebsite.com/patron. Okay. And Stephen, that I know this is a off week for you, but if you want to hear more Stephen Fishback during the week, where can people hear more about Paraphrase?
Oh, at ParaphrasePodcast.com or in your podcast listener of choice. So I don't think I have it in the Google one, but so if that's your podcast listener of choice, not that one, but any of the other podcast listeners of choice, look for Paraphrase. I mentioned it last week, but we have a really interesting interview with Lauren Wilkinson about her book, American Spy.
Okay. All right. Stephen, great work as usual. Follow at Stephen Fishback on Twitter. You can hear, read everything that he's written in his blog for people.com. Looking forward to tomorrow and catching up with Spencer. Thanks so much, Scott St. Pierre. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Special thanks to our friends over at True Car for sponsoring this episode of Rob as a Podcast. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up your first date, that luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer long. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof, watch as they bump up your car's value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you'll know how much it's going to ding your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can send to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True cash offer not available in all areas.